This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What's going on? Welcome to the Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader, and welcome aboard. Before we get into it, we want to take care of a little business. First things first, I want to thank my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of 2x72 grinder. This is an awesome grinder for knife makers and metal workers and everybody else. And if you go to broadbeckironworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off everything. All their packages, all their power hammer, all their grinders and all that stuff. It's great. It's a great company, and they're doing a great job. And I heard good things about the Black Friday sale. So many thanks to you, the listener, for getting squared away with that. So many thanks to Broadbeck. Ryan's the man. Merry Christmas, Ryan. I hope you have a great Christmas. Next are my friends at Even Heat, manufacturers the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-hillen.com. And listen, if you got to get it hard, you got to use an Even Heat. You know what I'm saying? You're a knife maker, you're a tool maker, you need something to be at a specific temperature. I actually use my Even Heat also to dry wood for stabilizing. You use it all. You need a specific temperature. You got to use an Even Heat. You know what I mean? Solid state drive, tap control. I mean, it ain't got much better than that. I couldn't run my business without my Even Heats. Many thanks to my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. Just got a shipment in of Norton Razor Stars, the best belts available. And when you go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com and then you get a 10-pack of abrasive belts, you're going to get 10% off. So that's great. Get the Norton Razor Stars. They're definitely worth it. I love those things. And if you're a knife maker in Canada, you need to be using Maritime Knife Supply. And if you're United States, they ship too to United States. So get involved with them. We're going to be doing some new stuff with Maritime Knife Supply. They support great blacksmithing and bladesmithing events in the United States and Canada. So they are a great company that is giving you value. So use MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. Next, my friends at Baker Forge. It's BakerForge.com, Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram for all your exotic steels, your bronze, my copper, my sand, my all that mosaic Damascus stuff they're doing. You go to BakerForge.com, put in the promo code FULLBLAST, you're going to get 10% off everything. They teach you how to use the knife. They teach you how to use the steel. They show you how to grind it. They show you how to heat treat it. And then when you're done heat treating, you're ready to etch it. You use the Grime Reaper, which is their proprietary degreaser. And then you're going to use Gator Piss. That's amazing. That's the etchant that they use. No mixing material, no mixing of waters or anything like that. You can use their Gator Piss Max, which is for stainless Damascus, and the Gator Piss Heavy for that, you know, that deep dark, you know, that deep dark situation, you know, in your mind. Well, besides that, they have lots of stuff all the time, and definitely follow them on Instagram because they're always doing great deals, and I'm a huge fan of the guys over at Baker Forge. You can also get some Gator Piss at Texas Ferry Supply. That's our friends in Texas. It's Evan and the guys. They've been with Knife Talk and Full Blast for a while now. And if you go to TexasFerrySupply.com for all your blacksmithing needs, for your farrier needs, for your bladesmithing needs, you go and you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you can get 10% off. 10% off your order. Get your abrasives there, get your belts there, get your sandpaper there, tongs, all that stuff. Definitely get yourself squared away with them. I'm a huge fan. Just got a package from my friends at Total Boat. Total Boat has great adhesives, paints, primers, polishing compounds. I'm a huge, huge fan of their adhesives. I use their two-part epoxies. I use their Fathom. I'm going to be doing some Fathom. I'm using the Fathom to make some hybrid handle materials for a set that I got coming in. I just got the wood just came in. I'm going to stabilize the wood. Then I'm going to use my molds. I'm going to use the Fathom, throw in the color that they give me, throw in some of the sparkles they give me, and I'm going to make some great stuff. So definitely use the two-part epoxy. Definitely try out the Fathom, and for sure use their CA glue. They have thin, medium, and thick. I'm all in on the medium. And their UV Cure Clear Resin is amazing. I'm a huge fan, and so will you. So wherever you're listening to this, you can look in the show notes, and all their hyperlinks and all the discount codes are there. So you don't have to call me out. You don't have to call me. You ain't gonna know none of half of you. Not, I mean, most of you ain't gonna call me. Maybe one or two, but you know that's a problem. Wherever you're listening to this, all the information is there, plus the hyperlinks and stuff like that. So there's a hyperlink there, totalboat.com/fullblast, and that's where you need to go. You know what I mean? Many thanks to my friends at GL Hansen & Sons. It's G.L. Hansen & Sons. I just got a pile of beautiful Jakarta from Greg, and it's really awesome. And there's so many different types of Jakarta they make. And it's a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed with epoxy under pressure and heat. So go to gcarta.bigcartel.com and you can check out the Bofa, the Ripple Cut, Tuxini, Mahi Mahi, all sorts of names, all sorts of patterns. He gave me a set of Starry Night that I cannot wait to use. And they're going to give you some razzle dazzle for your project, and they're easy to work with and easy to finish. So many, many, many thanks to my friends at GL Hansen & Sons. And if you ain't using GL Hansen & Sons, I don't know what the hell to tell you. Speaking of, I don't know what the hell to tell you, I want to thank my friends at Tormach, celebrating 50 years of being in business with the Black TA sharpening system. I love their water-cooled systems. I ground, so every knife that gets sharpened in my shop, I use the Tormach. I just got some messages from friends who started using truing tool. Truing tool makes sure that your wheels are straight and they're not egged and they're working great. I use the truing tool a lot. I use a scissor jig. I use all their different stuff. It's a very, very smart, intelligent machine, and the people behind it are even smarter. The customer service is great, and this is going to make you a better knife maker. Or if you're a sharpener, this is this thing that's going to make you have repeatable edges. I just got a message from a friend of mine who wanted to know. He's trying to get repeatable edges on his knives. He's thinking about swapping into a Tormach, and I said, definitely. And then I also said to give them a call because they're very, very knowledgeable and they can kind of make sure that you got what you need. You know what I mean? Many thanks to Tormach_sharpening on Instagram. I want to thank my friends at Nordic Edge, all my friends in Australia at Nordic Edge on Nordic_edge on Instagram, nordicedge.com.au. They're a great company and they're very supportive of the knife makers in Australia. They have supplies, they have materials. They're PS, all of their file guides are unbelievable. I love their file guides, and they do a lot of teaching. They do blacksmithing classes, knife making classes, spoon carving, leatherworking, all that stuff. So it's an opportunity for you to dip your toe into how to express yourself creatively. So I highly suggest checking out Nordic_edge on Instagram, nordicedge.com.au for sure, 100%. Many thanks to my boys over at Nordic Edge. They're great guys, and they're going to guide you. If you're in Australia, they're going to guide you. And last but certainly not least, I want to thank my friends at Phoenix Abrasives. That's phoenixabrasives.com. Phoenix Abrasives supplies superior abrasive products for every application: knife making, metal fabrication, glass fabrications, floor sanding, crankshaft, belts, cutting discs, grinding discs, flap discs, all that stuff. And they're great. I got some stuff from them, and they're fast. And I used the promo code FB10 at checkout, and I got 10% off. So many thanks to Phoenix Abrasives for supplying great abrasives. You know what I mean? I was going to have somebody on this week, and then I was going to do a call-in. I want to start to do more call-ins, and then a couple of things happened this weekend that I kind of wanted to talk about. I thought it was really, you know, exciting for me, and sad for me and I'm grateful, and I just... About 6 months ago, my sister passed away, my sister Jenny, and I did an episode about her as a amazing sister and inspiring person and a business person. She had a bookstore named Three Lives, and she was a sculptor, and I did a whole episode on that, and I was really, I was really blown away by the amount of people who wrote in and really, not just the normal listeners of Full Blast. These aren't people waiting for dick jokes and all that, you know? These were like friends of my sister's. And I didn't advertise this for my family and say, you should listen to this. I just, you know, I put these out there and then, you know, if it comes, it comes. I was surprised at how many of my sister's friends reached out to me after listening to the episode. And I was amazed. And listeners to this podcast. And it's kind of a different thing than like when I have guys on I just want to fool around with. You know, it's just a part of my life and stuff like that. And I thought I would just kind of give a little bit of an update, because something happened this past weekend that was really quite extraordinary. So, like I said, my sister passed away 6 months ago, and she was, not only did she have the bookstore Three Lives and Company, known for that, but she became a sculptor in the early 2000s. And it's really interesting because my sculpture and her sculpture were very similar, and we were kind of working in parallel. When I went to college and I started to do sculpture, I was doing these carved wooden lures, fishing lures, big ones. And I was kind of slowly evolving past, you know, the standard style. And then I kind of came up with my own variations of what I thought a lure should look like. And it was really quite an evolution, to the point where you would recognize the work as being giant lures, but they weren't like, you couldn't say they were Apollos. So you couldn't say that they were like from Storm Lures, or they were like, you couldn't say, oh yeah, that's, he's just, you know, ripping off Rapala. And that's, you know, one of the things that you talk about when you're talking about art is how you evolve as an artist. My sister was always very creative, Sister Jenny. So just a little bit of a backup. If you're thinking to yourself, maybe I need a tune-up on this episode, go back to listening to Remembering My Sister, Jenny. That was about 6 months ago or so, probably August or September, something like that. And then come back, and I'm going to try to like move forward a little bit in regards to her. She started doing sculpture once she and her wife moved to Greenport, Long Island, and they bought this old house and they renovated it. And one of the things they did to renovate is they made this basement shop. And the basement shop turned into this incredible space of parts and tools and drawers, and it was an accumulation of all these objects. And she was working on the house, and she was working on little projects in the house. She was doing a lot of construction-y things in the house. Mostly it was like little stuff, like if she wanted a window to look a certain way, and she made the trim around it. She had a style that was very, very like, you know, her own style. And one of the things that started doing sculptures for years and years and years growing up, let me back it up a little bit. Her father, my father, we shared the same father, where it was an incredible painter. And Jenny and Carrie were sisters, full sisters, with their mother, Pat. Pat was an incredible painter. And what's interesting is if you look at the work of their mother, Pat, and my father, Ben, who was also a painter, is totally different. My father did a lot of landscapes. He did a lot of city landscapes. He was really kind of classically trained in these landscape paintings. And he did mostly really a lot of oil painting. He did acrylic and he did a lot of watercolor. But he was very guided by the structure of architecture. Like, he really had quite an incredible ability to do very classic style stuff. He was also very interested in the brushstroke, or the palette knife being what the palette knife was. And they were the colors were always very on the muted side, lots of tans, lots of light greens, cream colors. He didn't really go into a lot of primary colors. You know, I think that if he could have lived with just a light blue, a very light sky blue, if he could live with tan, green, gray, and brown, with a little bit of white here and there, I think he had coughed it up. I think that if you looked at most of his work, my father's work, those colors were where he lived. And he mixed his colors all the time. He hated the idea of just using color out of the tube of the paint. paint out of the tube. Like, he didn't like primary colors. Never really saw him doing anything brighter or what somebody would say would be, you know, garish or vibrant. Or they were very, like, it was about the painting and the painting style and less about the kind of vibrancy of the colors. Versus his ex-wife, Pat, whose work was incredibly vibrant, and the colors were incredibly vibrant, and they're reds and pinks and green, you know, light blues and greens, but they were very, very, like, dynamic. The colors made it was, the paintings were of horses and animals and circus people and dancers, and the movements were very extreme. Versus my father, whose colors were these tans and muted colors, almost the exact opposite, and he never did people. He couldn't do people, to the point where when he passed away, and I was speaking to the rabbi about his work, nobody, this is another story, but when it got to the point where we were trying to create who he was to the rabbi before the funeral, nobody understood his work. Nobody understood my father's work but me. Like, I understood it, and I would talk about the colors, and I would talk about his subject matter, and if you looked at the body of his work, he never did people. Like, never did people. And I even pondered, I wonder if that has something to do with the way he felt about people. Like, maybe he didn't understand people, never he showed interest in people. It was about architecture and the landscape. And there is something to that. I'm not 100% sure, but his ex-wife, Pat, was the exact opposite. Like, there was almost no architecture whatsoever. It was all people and clothing and dancing and people and their pets and my sisters. She'd paint my sisters when they were younger. And the paintings I recall from seeing my sister's mother's work was the exact opposite of my dad, and it was all incredible colors and stuff like that. So Jenny and Carrie were subjected to incredible ideas of color and paint, you know. When my sister got a little bit, they were both incredibly talented painters. My sister Carrie is just an incredible watercolorist, and she's a painter. She's a little bit more demure in regards to her seeing her work, but I'm a giant fan of her work. I have it in the house. I actually rescued one of her paintings. The last time I went to my father's place, he had passed away, and his wife really wanted nothing to do with us. I went there, and I really wanted to get some things, and the only things in my mind I was hoping to get was one of my sculptures, which I got, and then her painting, everything else I couldn't have given a shit about. And it was like, I wasn't really allowed to get anything else, and she really didn't want it. So I think that she thought I was, you know, she thought she was throwing it away by giving it to me, but really it was mission successful. I got this, the most important thing I got was my sister's painting.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by Walden University. Ever catch yourself thinking, what if I could go after what I actually want and really make a difference? You're not alone, and that's exactly why I want to tell you about Walden University. For over 50 years, Walden has helped working adults like you get the W with the knowledge and skills to build the future you want and make a difference where it matters most. If you've been waiting for the right moment, this is it. Head to waldenu.edu and take that first step. Walden University, set a course for change, certified to operate by Chev.
Which is hung over the piano in our house. So my sister Jenny was, and my sister Carrie were, you know, being around their mother, Pat, who was a very successful painter. it just oozed out of them. And they had a great design decisions. They had both had really, you know, they were very focal. They were very intellectual in regards to their decisions on art. And Jenny started to do these little sculptures. And one of the parts of the sculpture came from me. So when I was really young and they weren't in the house, and my Jenny and Carrie would say to me, "What do you want for your birthday? What do you want for your birthday?" And I couldn't really think of anything except for that I wanted a companion. I didn't have my sisters were out of the house by the time I was really young. My parents were away. My dad was doing his thing. My mother was doing her thing. I was alone. I talk about this all the time. It was fucking me and Howard Stern and Don Imus and the radio. The radio were telling me jokes without yelling at me. They weren't scolding me. They weren't telling me what I'm doing wrong. They were just trying to keep me company and telling me jokes. And I wanted a companion. So I would say to my sister, what do you want for your birthday? I said, I want a dog. And she said, well, I can't get you a dog. Dad won't let you have a dog in the city. Okay. All right. Well, that was the thing. So I was just like, well, I'm just going to keep saying, you ask me, I'm going to tell you. So year after year, I want a dog. I want a dog. I want a dog. So one year, must have been in the 90s. My sister was, Jenny was so great about making little toys and little things for me. And she made me this little red house. And there was a little toy dog in it. And she's like, you always wanted a dog? Here's a dog house. This was, I don't know what happened when she made this house, but she realized how beautiful it was and wanted to do more. She slowly, slowly started to do more of these little houses, right? Small, like this. At the time, they were the size of a softball, maybe a little bit bigger. And these houses started to kind of evolve. And in the beginning, when I was talking about my lures and I was talking about how they evolved, how they slowly evolved, her sculpture just started to evolve on a very, very fast level. Her history in her bookstore, Three Lives and Company, she was constantly involved with books. So books became a huge part of the landscape of her houses. She was involved with, because she's in the bookstore business, there was so much typeset was such a big part of her life. My father at one point was a graphic designer, so graphic design and fonts, and that was part of it. So she would take these little snippets, like a collage, and she would put, like, she would make these boxes that look like houses, and then she'd put a piece of an image on it, and then she'd paint a little around it, and it became this mixed media. And if you go to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram, I'll put some pictures in the show notes of some of her work. So they became slowly, slowly, but not really that slow. If you think about the idea of the evolution of an artist, it's like, in my mind, it's like, I almost feel like there's this realism of your work evolving slowly because you're really trying to ponder the work. Well, her work just started getting, they became craveable, and her friends wanted them, and people wanted them. And next thing you know, she got a show in the town that she's in, and she got written up in the New York Times over time. And you're talking about in the course of years, she really started to develop these beautiful objects. These houses were amazing. Now, earlier, I had been making these lures. Back in 96, I was making these giant fishing lures. Back in 93, I started making them, and then I started making them a lot. They became very commercial. And the interesting thing was there was so much connection between her work and my work. One of the big things was I was making giant lures because at the same time, it's like, if I'm going to make a small lure, is it sculpture? But if you make a giant one, it's clearly sculpture. And then as I'm getting older and kind of more interested in certain things, some of the evolutions of the lures, after dealing with gallerists who didn't like the hooks because they were dangerous, I started to kind of get rid of the hooks, and I felt almost like they were not really necessary to the sculpture, and the movement was more interesting to me. The colors were more interesting to me. I started out using very deep, dark colors, kind of similar to how lures are, and then I started to kind of like go into primary colors, not like my father. I was doing some lures like the way my father would paint, where there were dark greens and tans and yellows and stuff like that, but I was far more interested in these ones that were not camouflaged. You know, they were, I didn't want camouflage. I wanted electric. I wanted vibrations. I wanted, you know, very stark. I wanted to, I didn't want it to fade away. I didn't want it to look like it was out of like a, you know, L.L. Bean ad. I wanted it to look like it was going to, like, you know, as soon as you saw it, it kind of propelled itself off the wall without you having to say anything or see anything. You just, the colors would just, you know, blast off, which was very similar to what my sister was doing. Lots of great colors, blues and greens, blues, lots of blues and reds. And there were images of every house had something different. My sister had these drawers filled with objects and she'd pull something out. And then this, maybe this object would, could be an eyeball, or it could be a place or a person or a tree or something. And then that would be the focal point. And then she'd build the kind of the story around this house based off of an image. And they were amazing. And then there was trim. And then all of a sudden, the things got more complex. You would have this, you know, this a drawer filled with different types of patterned tin. And she'd cut out tin roofs. And they looked like they were from, you know, like the Caribbean. Or then she did one. I have one of her houses that has like these a thatched roof. And she started to create these different style of houses. And once all of a sudden, as she was making these houses, it really was this amazing idea of it's not about the one, it's about many. And then it's the sum of all of them. And all of a sudden, if you have one house, it's one thing. But if you have multiple houses, you have a neighborhood. And then you have more houses, you have a town. And then all of a sudden, you have this collection in this town. And there was a similarity with the lures. My fishing lures were like my giant lure. I didn't call them fishing lures. I call them lures. And one of the interesting things was the more you had, it was the idea of the collection. You know, one lure was great, but a pile of them was amazing because then all of a sudden it's the concept of the tackle box. You know, you have a collection of them. So we weren't really talking about like, it wasn't as if she got some idea from me. I mean, it started with because, you know, there's some articles out there where she says, well, my stupid brother wanted a doghouse and I couldn't get him to shut up about it. And I made this little house. But there was this like beautiful parallel connection between our work. She loved my lures and she had in her house there probably, I would say 15 of my lures are there. And we would have these funny things like she would take my lures out of the shop and then I would take her houses. I was making a joke to Jill that I was stealing her houses and she was stealing the lures. Now, the great part was we both coveted each other's work, which was really amazing. We weren't competitive. There was a beauty to it. And I remember there were times where I would go down into her shop when I was visiting. And it was just amazing. We'd sit and she'd paint. She had these little different stations and she had table saws and chop saws and glue guns and scissors and nail guns and all sorts of stuff. And then different and shelves for everything and drawers for, there was a drawer. I did, if you follow Fader Knives on Instagram, I did a little kind of like a little montage of, or Jeff Fader, whatever, all of them. There's a little montage, and one thing I found is she had a cabinet. She had a little drawer filled with plastic palm trees and plastic cactuses. It was like this dedicated to these plastic cactuses and palm trees. It was hilarious. She had drawers with different types of steel wire, different types of, you know, it was just like, it was amazing. And everything had its place. And it just, when you were down there, it was very clean and you just could, you felt good being down there. And it was just incredible, right? So it was amazing. And to the point where a number of years ago, after Jenny had been very successful, she had a number of different art dealers. And she kind of headed towards doing these paintings. She stopped with the sculpture and started doing these paintings. And I kind of, you know, I wish she had. And I was, you know, we would talk every so often. And she was also very like, you can't tell her what to do. And I just didn't, I really wanted, if it were up to me, I wish she had kind of continued with the houses. But, you know, you can't really tell an artist what they should do. That's really some bullshit. If you start to say, I wish you'd stop doing this and I wish you started doing that, it's a huge mistake. Because when you're an artist and you're kind of creating this evolution, it is your personal journey. And if somebody starts telling you what you should do, and this is a problem I had, And I'll tell you, you can't really tell an artist. You shouldn't tell an artist. You shouldn't be part of an artist's decision. And I'll tell you the reason why. When I was in college, and we had a class, and we had to take something small and make it big. Make a big version of something small. And I was like, at the time, I sold the sculpture to a teacher, and he gave me $200, plus he let me fish on his property whenever he wanted. So my friends and I would go fishing, and we would fish all the time because it was Ohio, and the fishing was great, and it was awesome. And then we would go buy lures at wherever, and I had these Rapalas. And there was this, I thought, oh, this is easy. You know, I was just these Rapalas, and I did this Rapala. And it was so, like, fun to do, and so different from welding. It was carving, and my father was a woodworker, and I was using kind of like, instead of just using grinders, I was using spoke shaves and draw knives, and then I was painting, and it was, everything about it was so much fun. And then they were starting to sell, and I started to realize this was my avenue towards success if I'm, you know, or showing my father that I was being successful, because if I'm selling the work, then that means the work is successful. And if that's successful, it means I'm successful and I should be an artist. My teacher told me, who I love, who I actually saw a couple years ago, and we had a very great conversation. He was a huge, he felt as though what I was doing was too commercial. And if I was interested in getting distinction to graduate, and I was graduate with distinction, this was not the way to go. And I unfortunately listened to him. I wanted to do this huge wall of lures, and I had all these grand plans, and I was talking about him. He's like, listen, I know you like these lures and they're fun and all, but it's a little bit too commercial. And if you're looking to get distinction, this isn't the way. And I made a huge mistake by listening to him. I should have stuck with it, because when I graduated college, I ended up making the lures, and that was my business for a while. So I understood the idea of not telling someone what they should do and what they shouldn't do. I love talking art with Jenny. I loved being down in her shop. I know that I made a few lures when I was in her shop. I know I spent time with her down there. And then when I got older and I had my own daughter, Lila, who's been on the show before, she called in a couple weeks ago, or last week, a couple weeks ago. She would spend summers with my sister and Jill, we called it Camp Jenny and Jill. And she'd go out there and they would be down in the basement and they'd be making sculptures and painting and having fun and laughing. And the shop was just this beautiful, I mean, it was like this underground fantasy world. It was this wonderland where any drawer had something amazing in it. So my daughter got really, you know, it was around art. It was around artists, you know, exciting and vibrant. So we got it, right? So the successful sculpture. And a number of years ago, during COVID, my other sister, Carrie, who history and art. I don't remember that. So the name is fucking, it should have been Carrie Fader and then the end of it. But that's not for me to say. She specifically, though, is probably the greatest art curator I've ever met, and I'm going to say why. She's an incredible painter. She has understanding of paint. She has understanding of composition. I'm such a huge fan of her work. But she's an incredible curator because she doesn't just put stuff up where she thinks it's going to be good. She's so detail-oriented in how the work works with other pieces, and she's just like, she's an encyclopedia of art, and she's got, and I loved during COVID, we went to one of the shows she curated, and I just talking to her about the decisions that she made as a curator, and she was so smart, and she's such a genius, and in terms of the understanding of art, she became very, you know, well received because her people, they'd ask her to curate her shows, and she was just put everything into curation to the point where it changed my opinion about what curation was. So we went to the show. It was unbelievable. Carrie did an amazing job. And I said, you know, Carrie, at some point we're going to have to do a show where the three of us, your work and Jenny's work and my work, it should make a lot of sense because we speak the same language. The three of us speak the same language and we have the same opinion about art. And we're all relatively a little bit flippant about stuff, which is funny. And we come from similar blood and we speak the same language. And I had this idea for this name of the show because one of the common themes growing up was our father used to say, when we would say something mildly intellectual or expressing ourselves. He probably said this more to me than anybody else, but he would say to me, you don't know what you're talking about. You're just saying things to see how they sound out of your mouth. You don't know what you're talking about. And I said to Jim Carrey, I said, we've got to do the show. We're going to call it, You Don't Know What You're Talking About. You don't know what you're talking about. And it was a joke. It was very funny and everything like that. And then it never happened. And then neither one of them were just like too interested. And I always thought it would be great. I especially think that having a show with Jenny's, my lures and Jenny's houses, there's like a simpatico. There's like a relationship. And it's not like direct. It's not a direct relationship. But you can feel like there's the fingerprints of family, you know? But it's not, the way we painted it was the same style as we're a little bit frivolous and just like, we put it down, you put it down. And there's no hemming and hawing. You just kind of move and work and you just put it down. And there's not a lot of fixing it's not painstaking. Like her work wasn't painstaking. It was meant to be the way it is. And the same thing with me. Most people in the knife making world would call that, everything's got to be like perfectionism and all that bullshit. I feel as though let the thing be the thing, you know, and let's keep moving. So after Jenny died, you know, there was a lot of, we didn't have really a chance to mourn, really. Lilo went back to school and there wasn't a service or anything like that.
Time is precious and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
Jill was in Florida and Carrie was kind of in Florida and helping helping them and then going to New York and stuff like that. There was no funeral service. And Jill said that there was going to be a show. Her dealer was going to do a group show and then he was going to give a room for Jenny's work. And based on the time of when we could all go, and then Jill's schedule, and then when Lila's coming home from school and all that, we came across, well, let's go up the weekend. The only weekend we could have gone to see the work and see Carrie and Jenny and everybody, or Jill, was December 13th. Well, December 13th is my daughter's 21st birthday, and you know, it was one of those things. So Friday, I picked Lila up from the airport. She finished her semester, came in, and then the plan was my sister Carrie was going to come pick us all up, and we're all going to go to see my sister's show and spend the weekend with Jill and as a family. So there's a lot of, like, for me, you know, since Jenny died, I've been so busy. And I think part of it is, like, purpose subconsciously keeping myself busy so my grieving process is just a little bit stunted. I don't know, people grieve differently. I was doing the marathon. Actually, I was training for the marathon when I went to go visit Jenny down in early June, July. And I think it was July. And I don't think I grieved well, there was no service and there was no getting together immediately after because there's all sorts of different places that it was kind of hard to do. And I was wondering how it was going to be, you know, out in Long Island with Jill and Carrie and my wife and my daughter. I was worried for my daughter. My daughter has not really done well with this. The grieving process has been really hard on her. She was very close to Jenny. Jenny was more than an aunt. She was like this amazing person, the same amazing person that she was when I was Lila's age. So we got out there and we spent some time with Jill and it was great to see her and she's been great. She came up for Thanksgiving and she's just been fantastic and she's just extraordinary. And we were all on the you know, on the first floor, just hanging out and stuff like that. In my mind, I'm thinking, do I want to go down to the, when am I going to go down to the basement? When are you going to the shop? Do I want to go to the shop? Is it going to be strange for me to be in the shop? And then Jill wanted us to go down to see something, do something like that. So we went down to the shop, and it was like, it was so crazy being down in my sister's studio without her being there. And it was clean as a whistle. And I think that Jill kind of cleaned it up and straightened it up. And it just looked like it, like this pristine, beautiful place that was filled with creativity and sculpture and art and paintings and drawings and, you know, photographs, tons of photographs of Carrie and Jenny and my father and their mother and dogs and pets from the past. And there was something just like, it was just this incredible space that just you can't even imagine, right? And there's sculpture all over the place, not unfinished sculpture. And what I found, I forgot that I had done, and back in 1996, I got a very small anvil, it's probably 5 or 6 pounds. And I said, I can't do anything with this goddamn thing. This is 1996. So, you know, I said, you know what would be fun is Jenny's got the shop and stuff like that. I'll weld on a J and an F. J for Jenny, F for Fader. So I took the MIG welder out and I did a J. And then the move is you do the bead and then you flatten it down with the disc, with the sander. And then you hit it with the wire brush. And then you end up with this flat letter, and then you have these kind of the rounded part of the welds on the outside. It's a pretty slick move. I did it very rudimentary, but it was this, she had this little tiny little anvil, and I brought it up to her and the J and the F, and she mounted it on her table, and it was too loud for her, so she put some fucking foam on the bottom. It bothered her how loud it was. But it was covered, by the time I saw it down the basement, it was covered in paint. She'd been using it. I could see there were little tiny hammer marks where she was hammering things and making little textures and stuff like that on thin material. And she was using it. And it was covered in yellow and white paint. And she obviously was working on it, or maybe she was using it as something. I don't know what she was doing with it, but it was being used. She was using it. And you know, I said to Jill, I'm like, I don't know, she's like, do you need anything? I'm like, I don't want anything in here except for the anvil. The anvil's coming back with me. And we all decided, you know, don't get rid of anything. Let's just live with it for a little bit and stuff like that. And then there was some finished sculpture. So it was very sad being in there without Jenny. And my daughter was very upset. And it was just like, you know, it was just the best shop in the world. And so once again, you go to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram, and I'll do there'll be a Jenny shop tour. And it was this shop that she kept clean, and she kept adding things to it and making it this loving place. And it was about making art and being creative and stuff like that. Colors everywhere. And all, it was like, if you're down there and you can't be inspired to work, you just can't be inspired. I mean, there's nothing to you. We went to the art show. It was great. The curator was great. Her dealer was great. And I really liked the work. It was all work I hadn't seen before. So she has had a ton of stuff that hadn't been shown. And there were people, one guy, when we walked in, there was a guy who had one of the houses in his hand, and he wasn't holding it like this valuable piece of art. He was holding it like a baseball. He had it in his hand, like a ball. He was kind of cradling it. And I was talking to him for a while, and I said, you know, my sister would love the fact that you're just holding it like it's a thing. It's this beautiful object in it, you know, this fun object. This is, you know, exciting. And he knew about my lures, and we were talking for a while. And one of the things, my lures are all over Jenny and Jill's house. Tons of them. You know, like I said, I got about 15 or so. And then I started talking to the dealer. And actually, my sister Carrie's pissed at me because she was talking to the dealer. And I was looking at my sister, I was looking at Jenny's work, and I was just like, God, if Carrie ain't going to do this show, I got to say something. So I interrupted their conversation. It was really obnoxious. And I apologized to Carrie later. She was pissed at me for it. I was like, you know, you just ran in there. And I couldn't stop me. And I was talking to the dealer, and he had been in their house. He'd seen my lures. And I said, you know, it would be really great is if you ever thought about doing a show with all of us, Jenny's work, the work that she still has, and my work and Carrie's work, it would just be like, you know, there is a, and then I started talking about the relationship, and I said, you know, the relationship between our work makes sense. It's not just because it's you're doing me a favor or doing a family a favor, but there's, I can make a connection between all of our work. Because my sister Carrie's work is about the collection too. It's these beautiful arabesques. Let's see if I can remember, but they're these beautiful arabesques, and their connections, architecture, and there's the color, and then there's form, and the paintings are very structural, and it's very similar to the concept of the collection. I was talking to her for a while, and I was talking to her for a bit. And then we had a great time. My daughter's birthday, 21, we ended up going to a bar, and she bought herself a, you know, she got carded and got herself a beer. That was really cool. We had a really nice time, and her getting carded for the first time. And then we started heading back to the house. And Jill said to me, she says, there's something I need help with. And one of the things every time I would come up to Greenport or their house, anytime there was something, a big, heavy thing that needed to be done, they'd ask me to do it. They'd like have a few things that they just couldn't physically do, or something they thought I could do, and then they'd ask me, and I'd be like, of course, whatever you need. For over years, they'd have like a list of things they needed done. So Jill said, I got something I need some help with. I need to put this door back on the house. And I said, oh, yeah, no problem, whatever, it's fine. You got it. No problem, easy. And I'm thinking it's a screen door or something like that, or something to do with, you know, it's getting colder now, and maybe there needs to be like a storm door fixed or something's wrong with it. And I was all ready. So we get in the house, and I turn to Jill and I said, okay, what do you want me to do? And so she hands me one of Jenny's houses. And then it was Jenny's house, and then there was a door. It was a door. And the door was like, if you go to the post office and you get an old school P.O. box, there was like a P.O. box door. And that was the door to my sister's sculpture house. And she said, the door fell off and I need help putting it on. Do you think you could put it back on for me? I'm like, oh yeah, absolutely. So let's go down to the shop and we'll fix it. Let's go down the shop. I was looking for the right glue. Jenny had used, you know, like hot glue to do a glue, brass to wood and stuff like that. And I looked around, I found some, you know, appropriate, you know, glue that I thought was going to last, and we put it on a special way. And I was talking to her and I was just like, yeah, this is easy. And it was amazing repairing, you know, this little sculpture, my sister's sculpture. And we had a real nice night. We let it set in the shop, and I just really felt good about the fact that I was like fixing my sister's sculpture. And we had a great night celebrating my daughter's birthday. It was bittersweet. It was great to be together. I'm grateful for my sister Carrie, who was like a lunatic, and she was making a lot of jokes all the time and keeping the vibes high, and we had a great time. And then the Knicks were on. We were watching the Knicks beat the Magic to get into the NBA Cup, and that was fun. And Lila was great, and it was, you know, being in their house and being in Jenny's house was kind of bittersweet, but at the same time, it was really like, I'm really glad we did it. The next morning, we woke up, and there was a ton of snow on the ground, and Carrie and I went to get bagels. We got bagels for everybody, and Carrie and I were just having a nice conversation and just talking about things and talking about, you know, Jenny and life. And then we were back at the house kind of, you know, sitting around eating bagels and stuff like that. And then the dealer came back. And the dealer, nice guy, super nice guy, had a real nice conversation. They came back, and he had something needed to be repaired. One of the houses needed to be repaired, the wire. Sister had these, at one point, Jenny did these houses, and she would have this wire, and there would be these nails, and the nails would be holding wire, and the wire would be going from the base of the sculpture up into the roof, and then back to the base, as if the wire was holding the roof on. And they were beautiful, and they were this beautiful extra object. And Jenny was constantly trying these new things and adding new things. And you could tell where there were, like, she liked something and then she did it again. There was two sculptures that I was really thought were incredibly, incredibly thoughtful. And she took this piece of wood with this image on it, and then she cut it into strips, and then she put it back together, but staggered them, and then repainted them. And it just had this sophistication that I was like really, really amazed. It was really, really amazing. So the dealer said, do you think you could fix this? And I said, yeah, let's fix it. And he was talking about like, we were just doing some, trying to figure out how it would have been done and how she would have done it and how we did it. And I said, let's go downstairs. And I found, you know, there was a drawer filled with wire and I found the same wire. And I said, all right, well, you know, we should make the wire look a little fucked up because, you know, Jenny would have like tore, you know, wouldn't have been, you know, it would have been a little bit kinked up and stuff like that. And then let's do the wire down here, run it through this part of the roof and then down and back over the nail. And then we'll leave a little bit of, we'll leave a little bit of, you know, excess wire, like a tail. And I kind of repaired this thing fast, and the dealer says, wow, that was really fast. I would have been belaboring the whole thing. And I think, well, yeah, but you know, I know my sister, you know, I know how she did things, you know, we were all, you know, it wasn't just about like, it wasn't a belaboring issue. It was just like, this is how we're going to do it. And we're going to put it together like this and we're going to let it be its thing. And we're going to be, you know, have some, you know, zest for life, not zest for life, but just a little bit, you know, put it down and put it together and stop it. You're not, you know, this isn't, you know, tweezer time. And then the dealer and the dealer and I were talking for a while about her work and my relationship with her work and understanding her work. And I, you know, he was really interested in this. He wants to, you know, we're going to keep talking. And he actually has got a family that doesn't live too far from here. So we're going to do a studio visit and you know what, we're going to cross our fingers. Maybe that show will happen. And I'm really excited. But then the real thing that was amazing was the dealer and Jill came to me and said, would you feel comfortable finishing Jenny's unfinished work? You know it. Obviously, they watched me, you know, put these things together and get a good understanding. And I was blown away, frankly. I was blown away that, I mean, it was like, there was a lot of it wasn't just like, let's you know, think it through or anything like that. And it was basically like, if anyone's going to finish Jenny's work, it's going to be Jeff. The honor I felt was unbelievable. And this was one of those things where it wasn't just like, all right, give me all our old sculpture and I'll bring it back to the shop and I'll fix it here. It was like this, I'm going to be coming to Jenny's shop and I'm going to be finishing in her shop and thinking about how she would have done it. You know, thinking about how we would finish the roof or how we would do this and how we would do that. And it was just like, I was blown away. I was blown away with the opportunity. I was blown away with the honor. It doesn't even come close. Jenny supported me in a way that nobody else in my family had besides my wife. She believed in me when a lot of people didn't. Like my father didn't believe in me. He was proud of me at certain moments in my life. And generally speaking, those were moments of where he could take some of the pride too. Like when I was working for Charlie Palmer and I became like high up in the general, you know, as a general manager for Charlie, Charlie was a very, very important person in the culinary world and tough too. And he had a reputation for being tough. And my dad knew it because he knew some people in the restaurant business and he was proud of me for getting there. He was proud of me for... I don't think he was proud of me for making sculpture. I think that he, you know, I don't think he liked seeing me struggle. I don't think he liked everything. There were certain things he liked. Every so often, we would have some moments. The times he liked my work was when he was away from his wife. Like he liked when we were all together and we were talking about sculpture or we were making stuff together. I think he liked there was pride there, but Jenny was proud of what I was doing from. As soon as I started making sculpture, she loved it. She would steal it from me. She'd come into my shop and she would take it from me. There was stuff in her house that was unfinished sculpture that she says, it's finished, it's coming with me. There was a sculpture, an outdoor sculpture that I had to cut up, and I cut up one corner of the sculpture and that corner looked like a pyramid and she just took it. And I saw it this weekend and it was on their porch. It was this beautiful object. She coveted my work and I coveted her work. And it wasn't a question of who I was or you're not good enough. She just saw these things and loved them and then encouraged me to keep doing more. I think that she loved my lures. My lures were everywhere. And I loved her houses and I have a pile of her houses. Funniest thing is I would, every time I come up there, I said, you know, I'm not leaving without a house. And then she'd relent and give me a house. And then she would, I said, you got to sign the bottom of it or something. And then she'd write these funny things. Like there was one thing I was helping her with. And then she said, to my brother who tried to ruin this sculpture. And then it said, you failed. She tried to ruin the sculpture and failed, which is going to, you know, ironic. Now that I'm going to be finishing her sculpture, I ain't going to fail this time. There was one, you know, there was like to my dumb brother, all this funny, she would write these funny things on the bottom of the sculptures. But she loved my work and she loved my lures and she would, you know, she never said, I need you to do it like this or change it like that. She never asked me to make changes. She never said, oh, I want you to do a blue one for me or a red one for me. She would just come to the shop and she was, I need that one. And, you know, we would trade here and there or Jill would, you know, buy some as presents or I would send some or it was just like there in all their houses, they're all lures all over the place. But there was this sense of love and appreciation for what I was doing, not just because I was her brother. And that was huge. And the fact that I had the opportunity, I'm going to have the opportunity to kind of finish her legacy. It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming, frankly. It's hard to even think about, but it's, to me, it's an incredible honor. It's an incredible honor. So probably in the next few months, I'll be heading over there and then spend a couple, you know, maybe a week or so, or a couple weekends. And then I'm going to just work on sculpture and I'm going to keep in touch with the dealer. The dealer and I were talking about stuff and the thought of doing a show with the two of us or the three of us, hopefully the three of us. It's just exciting. And it's something I never thought would happen. Unfortunately, I thought it would happen when Jenny was alive, but I mean, these are the breaks. It was a great time. It was a great trip. It was sad too, because this was our time. This was a time to, you know, this is a time where, you know, Lila was flying around. She tired, finished school, got off the plane, ran out to Long Island, spent her 21st birthday watching, you know, my sister's work and stuff like that. And looking and being with, you know, not being with young people, frankly, being with older people. And, she's a trooper and she's dealing with grief in a very positive way. She and I are talking a lot. And, one of the things we're doing is, for her 21st birthday, I was thinking about what to get her as a present. And I started to notice she does like painting and I love watercolor. And I said, you know, I'm going to get her a really nice kit. And I have found this kit that I got in college. It's the best travel kit. It's the best travel kit for watercolor. Watercolor is one of those things where there's so much bang for your buck with watercolor because, you know, you're not like tube. It's not like giant tubes of paint. Usually you can get these kits and then they'll have, it depends on how much paint's in, you know, paint blocks are in them. And then you have these palettes on either side. And what they do is it closes. One side closes and the other side closes. And then you have this kit that you could put in your bag. And it's, you know, Winsor Newton makes them. And they're actually not easy to find. But when I find them, I always get them. Like I have two sets just for myself. And the first set is the set I had in college. So you're talking 30 years ago, 30 plus years ago, I'm using the same kit. And it's all you need. You don't need anything else. So I got her this really nice kit. I found it, and hers has got more paint than mine, which is amazing. So it's almost like she got too much choices. Like she said, does yours have this much paint, tonal paint? And I'm like, no. And frankly, you know what? I prefer less choices, frankly, because then all of a sudden you're dealing with how paints work with each other. And then the idea of contrast and, you know, fooling around with color theory and then bingo, bango, bongo. So I got her that and I got her some really nice, I got her three different types of really nice watercolor paper, cold pressed paper. And then I got the kind of paintbrushes that I like. I got a few different types because with watercolor painting, with paintbrushes in general, is like it's not like one size fits all. You find the brush that you like and then you stick with the brush you like. So I got her a pile of them. So I thought, you know, while you're home, I'm going to need help because I need to do some more. I'm going to need her to do help me with watercoloring at the shop. I'm going to give her a couple days in the shop because I need to do watercolors for some of the knives that we sell, our Fader knives, the Bob, the Everyday Feast Day knives. I got to do water. I get all of them got watercolors, and I got a pile to do, and I thought she could help me. So one of the things I thought of last night, we got home from my sister's, and I was, you know, we were tired and sad and a little bit like that. I said, hey, why don't we get the watercolor book? Why don't we get the watercolor out, and we'll fool around with the watercolor. And I, in my mind, I wanted to do what my father didn't do. So when I was younger, and I said this on a couple podcasts ago, my father was really bad at teaching things. And I wanted to connect with my father. And part of that connection, I thought, was he was going to teach me something, and then I was going to understand it and then kind of send it back. So like when I was playing the cello, he knew how to play the cello. His dad knew how to play the cello, but he couldn't teach me what to do. And when we would paint together, he could not, he couldn't teach me how to paint correctly. His paintings were, he would grab the paintbrush out of my hand, make this one part amazing, not tell me how to do it, not tell me what to do. But then every time I looked at this painting that I worked on with him, all I could see was, he did the best part of the painting, and I didn't know how he fucking did it. And it annoyed me, because it was almost as if I'm supposed to know what he's doing. He just couldn't explain it to me. And I thought, well, Lila likes to paint. I'm going to teach her how I paint, and then I'm going to try to explain it. And that's, you know, luckily for me, I still teach the Center for Mental Arts, and it gives me the opportunity to learn how to teach the people who take the classes how to do something, you know? And, like, I have to learn how to know what I'm supposed to do, then know what I'm supposed to do, then be able to express it in a way that it's understandable, and then they're able to kind of bring it back to me. You know what I mean? That's the most important thing about teaching. Teaching isn't just like lecturing. It's expressing something to someone else so they can understand, and then they can do it back. And with sculpture and painting and blacksmithing and stuff like that, that's harder than just doing a lecture and then they got to read a book and stuff like that and learn about it. Like, I need to teach, you know, I'm going to explain how you teach it, right? So at first I was talking to her about the watercolor. I'm like, here's the great part of a watercolor. You go, you know, you really want to, you don't want to start too dark, and you can let it dry. And then as your watercolor is drying, you can add water to it. And what happens is the pigment goes to the edges of wherever the puddle is and makes this very thin line of pigment. And all of a sudden you get these moments where the watercolor looks like printmaking. Like, you have these layers, it's like silk screen. It's like one on top of the other on top of the other. I said, but the most important thing about watercoloring is you really want to let the water do its thing and then let it rest and stay away from it. So I was explaining it to her, but at the same time, I wanted to paint the way she paints. But at the same time, like, if she's got a question, I answer it. So I like to put a little paint down, and I said, you know, we can speed it up, get the hair dryer out. If you get the hair dryer out, if you're trying to move quick, you can use the hair dryer and stuff like that. And she's like, well, you know, I'm going to paint like this. So she painted her what she wanted, and she got very even. For watercoloring, she did it very even, not the way I paint, but the way she paints. And when she did it, she painted this, just, it was like two letters, or two numbers, and the font and the color, it was just the way Jenny would do it. And the interesting thing is, she was confident enough in what she wanted to do. I wasn't confident in what I was doing as a painter or learning from my father, because I really wanted him to tell me what to do. And he didn't tell me what to do, and I would do something and I would do it wrong. And Lila had the confidence. Lila had the confidence to do it the way she wanted to do it. She didn't want me to tell her what to do. And it was exact temperament that Jenny had. Jenny wasn't classically trained. She had her issues with painting. I would talk to her about painting. One of the things about painting, I was talking to Carrie about this, I've been talking about, when Jenny and I were talking about painting, she showed me her paintings, her paintings that she did of these divers. And I could tell that she was having problems with the way she's painting faces. I'm a terrible painter. But what I know is the frustration of something doesn't look right, and you're going over it, and you're going over it, and you're going over it. And it gets to the point where the paint becomes a little on the muddy side. And it got to the point where you paint enough and you recognize your own deficiencies. you start to see it where other people are having the same problems you've been running into. So I would talk to Jenny. It's like, you know, I think you're overworking these parts. And she'd get mad at me for saying anything like that. And I felt as though Lila had the same degree of confidence that Jenny had in the way she was just even just painting this one little thing last night. I said to Hillary last night, I said, you know, I'd recognize this. I recognize this from Jenny, and I love it. And I love the fact that she's confident. I wasn't confident as a kid. I was looking for the approval of my father. I wanted my father to say, no, yes, you did it right. You did it the way you did it. I didn't want him to say, yeah, you did it wrong. I wasn't confident as a child, you know, and my father didn't really help me build my confidence. And when I was doing even this little stupid thing last night, she was confident in what she wanted to do. She understood what I was saying. She asked me a couple questions about mixing color and, well, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But she did exactly what she wanted to do, and she felt as though she was supported. And it was this tiny little thing. And most of you are just thinking to yourself, what are you talking about? When you're trying to express yourself, and you have the support of the people around you, you are relatively fearless in what you're doing because they like what you're doing, or they trust in your decision making. And that confidence in supporting an artist is so critical to this person's growth. And it was one of those things. It was really bittersweet. The weekend was really bittersweet. You know, it was totally. I talked to Jenny when I was in the last thing I did was I went down the shop. I was all by myself and I was talking to Jenny, and I'm not trying to be woo woo. I was just like, I was down there. Who knows when I'm going to be down there again. And I just said to her, you know, I really miss you. And I can't believe you're not here. And I said, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know how you feel about me finishing your sculpture. When her directive to Jill is do whatever you want with my work, give it away. She wanted to give it away. She wanted to work with the dealer. She wanted Jill to work with the dealer. She also, you know, how do I feel about her finishing her work? Well, I think that she'd appreciate it. I think that she liked the fact that I wanted to do it. And I think that if somebody was going to do it and Jill wants it done, then I'm the man to do it. So I said to Jenny, I spoke to whatever, her essence in the shop, I'm not going to let you down. You know, I'm going to do this with confidence, and I'm going to do this within the confines of how you do it. It's not going to be the way I do it. It's the way you do it. I've seen her work before. I know how she does. And I did it in front of the dealer. Did it in front of Jill. Fixed these problems, you know, lickety-split, because I just know how she is. I know her temperament. So this is the beginning of the legacy of my sister. And we'll find out. We'll see what happens. We're getting into the Christmas season. We got to have some Christmas cheer. I hope this wasn't too blue for everybody, but at the same time, it's like, you know, my grieving process is different. I got a lot of messages in regards to other people in regards to their grieving process. I'm working harder now. I'm working harder in the shop. I have something really exciting, but I can't even talk about. I'm making some knives for a TV show. I'm gonna leave it there. I'm gonna make more work. I mean, making more sculpture now that I'm by myself in the shop again. I put more sculpture out. I was going to do a whole thing on how pissed off I am about the way art's perceived, some of my sculpture was perceived by some magazines. I'll have to do it another night. Remind me, I'll have to do it another time. I was going to fuck around. But this was great. This was a great weekend. Once again, you know, I'm honored that my connection with my sister has put me in the position that I can, you know, finish her work. And I mean, I can't think of a higher honor. You know, I can't really. And it's a nothing thing. My sister's not fucking Andy Warhol. My sister's not fucking Jeff Koons. My sister's Jenny Fader, and somebody I looked up to, and somebody who was my inspiration, and somebody who was my greatest supporter, and somebody who believed in me, and who believed in believed in me as a father, believed in me as an artist, believed in me as a person. And I'm not gonna let her down. You know, so with that said, we'll do some more when the time comes and I'm going down to the shop. We'll fool around. I was going to call Carrie, but Carrie doesn't want to talk about it. She doesn't want to talk on the podcast yet. I'm going to get her. I'm going to get you, Carrie. If you listen to this, I'm going to get you. But with that said, many thanks to everybody who's been listening to this whole saga. I know it's not, you know, dick jokes and stuff like that, but at the same time, it's meaningful to me, and I'm going to put it out there for all you to, you know, whatever, listen to, you know what I'm saying? So with that said, guys, we're going to have some fun next week. We're going to fool around some more. If you want to support me, I'll tell you how you can support me. Go to faderknives.com. And buy a shirt, buy a hat, buy some merch, buy the bingo, bango, bongo. Don't send me stuff. Just, you know, support that, support the sponsors, and, you know, make some sculpture, for Christ's sakes. What do you got better? You don't have anything better to do. You listen around. When you're listening to this goddamn podcast and you're making art, you're doing me, that's the favor you can do for me. Make some sculpture, make some paintings, play some music, be creative, do something of value. Do something of substance. Don't be, as my sister says, don't be a dullard. Do something of substance. Have some substance in your life. All right, guys. We will see you next week. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.